been open, the loving kindness and the good sense is used as a means to develop concentration. So often there is really this idea to do the loving kindness and it helps us to develop a concentration which actually is not tight. So this is often when we try to concentrate, we do it in a tight way. And so loving kindness is a way to really anchor and focus, concentrate in a non-tight way. That's open. That's why there's a lot of emphasis on that. But to me, I think, in a way, and that's what I think the Buddha recommended to here, I think this is a kind of resentment. Because I think it has, I think like any Buddhist meditation, it has this experiential inquiry. And so it's kind of questioning certain fixed ideas, certain fixed feelings we might have. And so I think at that level, personality is actually very educated. And I think in daily life, that aspect can be actually nearly more transformative than the concentration. Like, you know, you go back to daily life, now I'm going to concentrate with the loving kindness, let's say the phrases. And that's for you to find out if it works that way. But what people have found that it works is in terms of their relationship with the two of themselves. Like there was this wonderful story somebody told us once, how, you know, she was called up to see the boss, and she was really oops, you know, because the boss was quite frightened. And then because she used to do a loving kindness meditation, she said, okay, I'm going to do loving kindness meditation for 10 minutes. And what changed actually was the view she took in with the loving kindness, and when she went into the room, she felt so invaluable, just like herself. And then they could meet more at that level, that her voice, she's frightening, I am frightened, and then being kind of interested. Now often I have a friend telling me that about the loving kindness, that it helps you genuinely to meet the person in that moment where they are, where you are. So that I think can have that questioning of it. So that's what vipassana, this is what I translate as experiential inquiry, which is the second aspect of the meditation practice, is actually often because it can be translated as, vipassana can be translated as looking deeply, which is literally what it means, vipassana. Or it can be translated as insight. But this is two very different aspects. Because looking deeply is an activity. You're doing something. Inside is something happening. You see something differently. And so if the emphasis is put on insight, then you think, oh, I must have an insight. If I'm doing insight practice, I must have an insight. And it must be like a big revelatory special insight. Well, I think the aspect which is you need to look more at is what is the vipassana about is about questioning this idea, questioning habits, questioning. And so I think with the loving kindness, I think that's what happens. But more, it's kind of interesting, less at the conceptual level in a way, but more as a, I would say, emotional feeling, experiential level, that we question how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about everything. That's a person I think is also very much vipassana practice. It depends what you call it. But I think it also gives us insight that we have a different feeling toward ourselves. I would say walking meditation and different functions. One function is to meditate in movement. One function is to use energy, a little more energy. One function is actually to meditate with open eyes, and to have contact with things around us. So we can do the walking meditation in different ways. You can do, for example, the walking meditation this morning, feel loving kindness. You could just, of course, do the loving kindness with your hands. Or, which might work better, because there are other people around you, as you see someone, immediately you could do the phrases. And you see somebody else, you can do the phrases to them. Or you hear a bird, the phrases to the bird. So I think it works better in the walking meditation to do it towards others in that way. Or, again, if you see a blanket, oh, may the person insist on that blanket, you can do the phrases that way. So you connect, in a way, with the person in that way. But outside of, in a way, doing loving kindness meditation as a theme, I think what is useful is when you do the walking meditation, to do the meditation with a different senses. So then it depends on what's going on. And it's one of the senses that I find very interesting is feeling. So this is something we can work with, that we see something, and generally it's very interesting how fast we get an idea, a comment about it, and also we get a feeling for, oh, I like the red. What kind of blanket is that, you know, or whatever it might be. And it's very interesting to see that, not to judge it, but to see how we see purple, or we see red, or we see yellow, and there is a strange different feeling to it. And that's very interesting, but that's also another practice that you have, which is just being aware of that pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feeling. Which is a start for many different things. I want this, I don't want that. So then when you see things, to really use it. So I would not say that walking, unless you are, you know, deep in nature by yourself, then you look at nature also. But I would say it's more something out there. I would not generally focus so much in it. Or if I focus inside, I would more focus into things. So to be aware of the touch of the feet on the ground, the movement of the leg, the way of holding one's body, so more being bodily aware. Yeah, again, that's why I think generally I would say go where it's more obvious. So it's more obvious on the feet, just stay with the feet, or stay with the lower part of the leg. That's what I'm interested in. But some people, they kind of like to be aware of the body walking. So that's what they do. I think there is no one sacred way to be aware of the body when you walk. So I would really, you can use a walking meditation in different ways, cultivating the loving kindness outward, or cultivating being in contact. And then it's kind of like, as we were talking about this afternoon, you see something. Can you be with it in what I would call a creatively equanimous way, of which immediately comment about it, react to it, want to do something. Of course, in daily life, you have more things and you have to act on it. But here, it's kind of like more like a laboratory. I see a color. Can I see the color? I see a sun. I that often, in a way, you, let's say you see somebody. Let's say you see somebody you know. And actually often you meet, I mean, especially if you know you're going to meet that person, then you're generally actually going to meet the person you met a week ago or a month ago. And you meet him or another. Or you might meet the person with a hope of getting something from the person. So you kind of go with this, you know, and you do that and talk about this and da-da-da, and then the person is somewhere totally different. So you're kind of going to meet this person and actually you get that person. So often you have this, I would say, several layers of things going on. You have also how you might feel at any given moment. You see, if you feel happy, joyful, and you see somebody and you might interpret it in a very joyful, happy way. If you are really kind of feeling unhappy and everything, and you might see the same person looking the same way and totally different interpretations. So yeah, we have a lot of these kind of commentary, expectations, memories, and also perception. Blame perception. That's very interesting. Sometimes, and I think that's what that experience was about, that sometimes I like it when, you know, this looks like this, or this is this, and it's something completely different. I mean, recently, I took a friend to visit an ancient church, and he come out of the church. The friend and my husband are a little behind me, and there is this thing, white thing, in the field. And from where I was, I thought, a white kangaroo in France? You know, there was one, yeah, like, it was really strange. Kind of look closer, and it was a white dog. It was a strange white dog. But to me, it was so interesting because there was this feeling, and I could not really, in terms of perception, I was not sure what it was. And as I kind of thought, yeah, it looks like a dog, but it is a bit strange. So I think it's very interesting. I think one of the things with the meditation, with mindfulness, you actually can become more aware of actually the different plans, different planes of plans which are between us and our encounter with the world. This is something that happened a lot. It must be clear that if, you know, there is difficult people in life, we can be also difficult for other people, goes both ways. And of course, difficult people at this difficult time will induce unpleasant feelings. You know, and I think this is unpleasant. We're not bad first. We're just human. But then is, how do I creatively engage with that difficulty, bad difficult feeling tone, unpleasant feeling tone, and with the person and with myself? Or do I react? You know, I have a negative feeling tone, they're bad, and I am bad. Often it's so lot of people in the negative category, and then they all moved on to different categories. And so I think it's helping us to see we are different kinds of things. I think it's helping us to open, definitely. But I think to me it's also opening us in a wide way to see that it's conditional. And so I might have, you know, unpleasant feelings because this happened with that person. It doesn't mean that I have to have that feeling forever after. Or that that person is a difficult person forever after. Or that I'm a bad person forever. I think it's that which is also important. Oh yeah, I felt this way. And that's one of the things we have to know, looking at how long is it going to last. So we can just notice how long is it going to last, or sometimes we can use a loving kindness to help with the changes. Because doing the loving kindness is like we can move to a different perspective instead of thinking it's like this. So we really try to learn to be like this. I have that feeling, but I can also have that other feeling, and this person is not just reducible to this one word or this one action. And also, as you see here, the person is not there. I mean, of course, we can bring the person here, and then it can become unpleasant again. But I think, possibly, but I think that what the loving kindness, back to the being in the experience, right now, this person is not here. And so it's not even that he contractually thinks this person is not here. He's actually in experience as people with hopefully this other. Nobody doing nothing for me. And I think we could have seen that. So then this, again, the in terms of the extension, that's what I was saying. The first one is to oneself, next people in the room, and the third one, which I recommend, is live outside this room. And so then you can include the animals, the plants, and the people. And we kind of include everything in here, whatever is alive. And then I think it's kind of according to one's interest, one's... So some people might bring more the animals, some people might bring more plants, some people more people, some people all of the things. So personally, I would bring everything that is. Or you, I could even say everything is related. Maybe I'm aware of. But you can be very wise. Then sometimes also it can be a work. Good. I realized afterward I did not explain it, you know, actually as good as doing it. Generally, it means people you cannot see, you are in contact with, but you don't have, like, I would say, personal, you know, special relationship. Like the postman, the lady at the cashier, the, you know, people, odd people on the street, and things like that. And the point, actually, I think, when we do this practice, we realize what you said, that actually at one level. We generally don't consider them if they don't impede in any way on our safety or whatever. And we say, oh yes, of course, we're the raising of the fear. So we can see them as categories. And then, if we see people as categories, generally it's useless, unless they do something to us, generally it's useless. But the aim of the practice is to see in the way people behave. So then when you see the postman, then you see a human being. And then you cannot get any question to the postman or to the lady at the cashier. That's one of my practices when I go to the supermarket, to see the lady how you need to be friendly and to smile. But I think the neutral category is a little for us to question a little when we bunch people up, when we make people into teams. So the person is a postman, and I like postman or I don't like postman or whatever. When each postman is an individual. So I think it's kind of, to me, that's why I think the category is important in terms of questioning in a way the category. To me, that's what it is about. It's actually, to see, you bring people, yeah, that passerby, that person, and then you bring them in. Generally, yes. They kind of generally move very quickly. Yeah, there is a fact that very, very possibly there is a situation which is creating irritation for good reason. So, because possibly the person, I don't know, doesn't do the work or whatever, for whatever reason, then, you know, there is things are not working the way they could be better. So then, it's always the thing is that, do I change myself in terms of the person? Do I change myself in terms of the irritation? Do I change myself in terms of doing something different at work? Do I try to change the person? It's all a little difficult. I mean, it's all a little different aspect. But I think it's to see that to have loving kindness in a way, I would say to have compassion for your irritation, to have compassion for the person who possibly is not doing things a certain way because of their old conditionality. And then it's to see within the condition. So that's really one of the great teachings of Buddhist meditation is, what are the conditions here? There is me, there is certain reality, certain if I can do it, they should be able to do it. So then we have to be really careful with that. Then, of course, you could say, well, you know, it doesn't matter. This can take all the time in the world, whatever it takes. Or I'll do it and then it will be easier. I mean, there are many different positions. And so, personally, that's what I call creative engagement. How can I... So I go repetitively to see the work and repetitively I see the person. And very likely, even before you go to the work, you feel irritated before you even meet the person. Will the person have done that or not? And yet again, I think that's when one has to be a little careful with that anticipation. You know, and then after work, the kind of continuing living. So that, I think, is one has to be careful with this, widening the field more than... So there is that first thing we can work with, is about time. And there will be, and then the next thing is to, at work, is there a way that I can handle it differently, or is it the fact that I have to accept it, we'll talk about this with our food, and get on with it. But in a way to see it, I would nearly say, as for at least a week, can I try something different every day? So you go to work instead of, oh, this person, they're terrible. Each day try to do something different with that situation. And then if after a week of trying something different every day, terms of change, then you have to accept it in some way if you want to stay in that job, I think. So it's kind of like adding this to what I call acceptance and transformation. Sometimes you have to accept the situation anyway, and then you have to see, can I transform myself, can I transform the situation, or is the transformation in the acceptance of the situation? And that it depends, it really depends on the condition, and what are the leeway within the condition. But what I think would not be very helpful, so unavoidable, is to think, it's always like this, and it will always be like this, and then kind of get crazy, and then you get like the contact is the trigger. That's what is very interesting in terms of the awareness practice, mindfulness. You see, you just have the name of the person, you get the feeling. You see the person, you get the feeling. But when the person is not there, it's not possible. And when you see the person, is a person doing it all the time, non-stop, of the way he is trying to. Also, there is a difference between if somebody causing you problems 10 times a day and somebody causing you trouble one time a week. So it can also open how we kind of, even if it's one time a week, we think it's every day all the time. That I think is kind of what the conditionality and the impermanence of things to see. It's what we learn. Thank you. loving kindness, we have to be careful not to be too idealistic with it. You know, that I'm going to do the loving kindness immediately. So it can have an immediate effect. And also it can bring down, because you bring all these different people, it can bring that either, as you said, you know, some irritation. And it's true, how does it feel? How long does it last if I don't proliferate it? So I think this is the thing about whatever feeling we have, whatever emotional sensation we have, if I don't do anything with it, how long does it last? But trying to be aware of it in the body, so that's what the suggestion will be. How does it feel in the body? What kind of sensation is it? And then to see how the sensation is generally connected to certain thoughts. And if you go more in the sensation than in the thought, which reinforces the feeling and vice versa, what happens to that feeling, that sensation? So I think then that's also part of the creative engagement. It's kind of the, not that I should not feel irritated, we will feel irritated at different times for whatever reason. Or, you know, like I came from France, I was in the airport, I got my luggage, and I was my usual, right, fast self after being in an airplane. And as I was being this fast self, flamblobbing through the people, I thought, the people realized I was a meditation teacher. They would think it's a bit weird. Because generally a meditation teacher is supposed to be very slow and, you know, and just to be aware of that. How invested I am in my feet. You know, I want to kind of get there in time, but how much invested I have in it. Not that I don't have the feeling, and I don't kind of, you know, go fast, that's generally what I do, but can I be aware of it? Kind of like a creative way. That's what I'll talk about this afternoon. It's really, you know, where does the equanimity come from? That I'll talk a lot about this afternoon. Because often we have this impression of equanimity is something being told, I am equanimous. Nothing disturbs me. Or is it more that you kind of explore? And in the exploration of it, you go inside the experience, you observe it, often it touches, not always, but often it touches. And what is very interesting is that moment, because when the thing is there, it's so there, definitely. When you have kind of feeling, especially if it's a little unpleasant, it's so there that it's hard to imagine that it could be not there. And that's what actually makes it more permanent, is that feeling that, wow, you know, I have a pain in the knee, or I have a pain in this, or I have this feeling, it's there. And because it's unpleasant, it's going to stay, it's going to last, and then you stay with it. That's really good. Not necessarily, but if it's really intense, then it won't go. And I think that's where we have to see the difference between the different levels. Like you could have a light level, then the habitual level, and then you have the intense level. And the intense level is not going to start to be looking at it, doing all kind of things, loving kindness, whatever. It's still there. I think we have to be aware. I think it's very important to see that we do different things with different levels. I think the light is very important, that often we see the light, manifestation of impatience, of fear, or pain, or whatever, and very often by grasping at it, we ratchet it up really fast. But actually, if we stay when it's light, and we observe it, then we will keep going. about the three levels of life that he told me. Intense is when something happens suddenly in me, which shocks you, and then sends a full, the whole shock to your system. And then you like, you go round and round, and then it takes a few days or a few hours to unravel. So that's one thing. And generally, yeah, and generally what I suggest is that the only thing we can do is actually try not to imagine. Because generally with something like this, if we go back into the past, we go into the future, and then we really become crazy. And so that's why, in a way, with the meditation, the breath, the loving kindness, it helps us not magnify and create illusions. But yeah, there is another thing that we do, which I think there, the meditation, very much, and this is in terms of the entering. So the concentration, the coming back to the breath, the coming back to the loving kindness, to the awareness of the body, is that generally, as you said, we start to think about something, then we start to either proliferate around it, and the story becomes bigger, bigger, bigger. Or we think about something and we think about what we think about something, but or what how the person is going to think, and if they think that way, then how am I going to feel? Or, I mean, we can feel in many different ways. We can feel in terms of judgment, we can feel in terms of empathy, we can feel in terms of rumination. I mean, there is many ways to feel. And in a way, one of the main elements of the meditation is the fact that you feel, but you come back to the breath, to the level of your feet. So you cannot feel so much. You go, and you come back. And so then the coming back with the entering has three, I would say nearly say three or four effects. The first one is you don't feed the feeling. So you're not feeding the mental feeling. All the emotional habits. So first thing, you don't feed it, so it does not magnify. Second thing, you come back, you start to dissolve its power, because you come back, so it's kind of less powerful. In a way, because often you have the feeling, I cannot stop thinking about it. But the fact that you come back to the breath actually helps you to be more. And then that brings you back to the full moment. Because when we go into thought, generally we go into reduced attention. So generally our thought is only a little bit of the experience I am having now. It's a little kind of commenting or description or explanation or whatever. But it's kind of generally reduced my experience. So abstraction. So you come back to the, to an experience which is much wider, much more pluralistic, where you can see more different conditions instead of being more and more stuck in kind of one aspect of your experience, of what you could be defined by. And then the fourth thing, which I think is most important, is that actually this process brings it back to the mental logic, for example, to its creative function. So that in thinking, reflecting, imagining are creative functions. And I think the meditation helps us to go back to the creative function instead of getting a little stuck in the automatic, proliferating but as you say, it can